This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Zen and the Birds of Appetite by Thomas Merton. Where there is carrion lying, meat-eating birds circle and descend. Life and death are two. The living attack the dead to their own profit. The dead lose nothing by it. They gain, too, by being disposed of. Or they seem to, if you must think in terms of gain and loss. Do you then approach the study of Zen with the idea there's something to be gained by it? This question is not intended as an implicit accusation, but it is nonetheless a serious question. Where there's a lot of fuss about spirituality, enlightenment, or just turning on, it is often because there are buzzards hovering around the corpse. This hovering, this circling, this descending, this celebration of victory are not what is meant by the study of Zen, even though they may be a highly useful exercise in other contexts, and they enrich the birds of appetite. Zen enriches no one. There is no body to be found. The birds may come and circle for a while in the place where it is thought to be, but they soon go elsewhere. When they're gone, the nothing, the no body that was there suddenly appears. That is Zen. It was there all the time, but the scavengers missed it because it was not their kind of prey. Joko, in her way, used to describe students as birds of appetite. But her favorite metaphor was of baby birds sitting in the nest with their beaks wide open, waiting for the mother bird to drop a morsel in. And for her, it was the passivity of students just waiting to be fed that was descriptive of their appetite. And their basic stance of, I'm empty, fill me up. Merton has a somewhat bloodier metaphor here, which I'd like to go into some detail with you. It is interesting to see him start this book off with the idea of no gain. The metaphor of vultures circling carrion, a dead body, it's interesting. You can take it in a number of different ways. See, I would say that we are both the vultures and the carrion, and that in our hunger or our desperation to be fed or get something or to fill ourselves up, we We devour ourselves. We attack ourselves. We are our own dead meat. And for a long time, I think the vulture in us attacks some aspect of ourselves, tries to devour it, tries to eliminate it, or tries to feed off of it. We can have that kind of relationship to our own self or ego, either calling a practice a sort of relentless attack on our own ego, however we conceive of that. Sometimes people sit as if their very thoughts were something to be completely extirpated, that the goal was an absolutely clear mind. Sometimes it's a variety of wishes or desires or emotions, our anxiety or anger or fear, self-doubt. And we just attack ourselves relentlessly for having these qualities. We can be quite vulture-like, merciless, in just an endless, repeated poking out of our own eyes, trying to destroy something we hate in ourselves. Merton says the birds may come and circle a while, but they soon go elsewhere. I'm afraid I think that's rather optimistic. I think that we can persist in a very long time, either in a project of gain or a project of self-hate, all in the name of practice. And it can go on for many, many years. Joko used to say it took people at least 5 or 6 years to find out what practice really was, and at that point, if they found out, most of them quit. And that is the kind of issue of what happens with these birds of appetite if they decide to move on. Do we find out that practice is really about something else? Do we actually then stay there and find out what, or do we move on where we can start the game over somewhere else with somebody else, just slightly varied rules? For Merton, the carrot here, I think, is a kind of dead practice. It's dead because it's stuck in an idea like enlightenment or spirituality that is either the carrot or the stick that drives us. But it has no direct immediacy for us. It's an idea, a received idea. And he suggests that the birds of prey have to get tired and give up and go someplace else before something more real will emerge. And I think there is something to that, in that very often, for anything to emerge in our practice, we have to first get really, really bored or discouraged with what we think practice is supposed to be. Sometimes we just have to get really bored with ourself. We have to sit hour after hour, day after day, sesshin after sesshin, and realize that the same four or five stupid thoughts are going around and around in our head all that time. Like reruns on television or commercials that keep going around, or that jingle you can't get out of your head. Except in our case, the jingle is, what an idiot I am, or what a Buddha I am, right? Same few things will go around and around and around. And it's a fact of practice that sometimes we simply have to pass through a great deal of boredom with ourselves in order to have those repetitive thoughts lose their power. See, in a funny way, boredom is the road to emptiness. Because emptiness means things have no real substance. They're transitory, dreamlike. They have no actual reality. They're just thoughts. And our experience of that isn't necessarily going to come in some big mystical flash. It may come very slowly with just a kind of wearing out of self-preoccupation by just being present over and over again to the next thing. Now, part of the dilemma of running a place like this is that in a strange way, we both want to, we have to leave out some dead meat to attract customers in the first place. Because really, who are our students going to be except buzzards? And at the same time, eventually we were trying to devise a practice that we might say, well, gag a vulture. tempt them in, make, you know, we have to, in a way, engage our secret practice. We all come because there's something we're trying to get or something we're trying to get rid of. And one way or another, the Zendo has to hang out a sign that gets people to believe, this is it, it's here, come and get it, right? Have to trick people, come in, right? And once you get them in, you have to do something that both engages and gradually deconstructs the curative fantasy. Now, I think that for most people, a place with many shaved heads and black robes and elaborate altars and Japanese architecture offers much more tempting bait for the vultures. In some sense, what we do here, the way we present ourselves in a little apartment on a side street with a not very charismatic teacher, is sort of designed to get people over their curative fantasies, maybe a little too rapidly. Maybe a lot of people take one look and turn around and go someplace else. But Merton is talking about what happens when the vultures get bored and fly off. That's when he says the nothing, the nobody that was there all along suddenly appears. Again, I think it's a little optimistic to say suddenly. In a certain sense, I think for most people, it is a big challenge to hang around for a substantial length of time once the vultures of curative fantasy have gotten bored and give up. Then you really are in, I don't know if I want to glorify it by calling it a dark night of the soul, but there's a way in which you really are at loose ends. You really have lost track of what it is you're doing. Just sitting sounds grand when it's a quote from Dogen, but when, the hours start to pile up and you're just sitting, it can start to feel like, I'm just sitting here, right? I guess they mean it. I think it really does take often a very, very long time to be in that desert when the buzzards fly off and just stay there for the experience of whatever that is, to whatever emerges. And it's true, something can emerge. I think that to say it's the nothing or nobody runs the risk of reifying it and creating yet another image of another something. This something is going to be nothing, capital N nothing, right? That's going to be the real prize. We always have to be careful of creating yet a new image of the something that is going to appear. Joko pretty adamant in saying that enlightenment was the absence of something, not the presence of something. So in a way, it's not so much that something new appears there in the desert when the buzzards go away. Perhaps for the first time, we simply let ourselves experience something about life as it is directly without trying to move on, without trying to go somewhere else. To see that the desert landscape is quite beautiful just as it is.